6,000 miles behind. I left you 6,000 miles, feel so alone. 6,000 miles, have to travel 6,000 miles to get back home. I'd have to sail oceans boundless, I'd have to cross in the skies. Some nights I do dream I can grow wings and I can fly. That's 6,000 miles.
The Waifs with their lovely song 6,000 Miles, a song about distance and longing for home. Just some of the themes that crop up in The Landing, the new novel from the Aussie writer Susan Johnson. It's about a small community, migrants and strangers, and whole collections of secrets. Susan Johnson's earlier books include Flying Lessons and My 100 Lovers. She's also a feature writer on the Brisbane Courier Mail. She's with Kate Evans.
Susan Johnson, congratulations on The Landing.
Thank you very much, Kate.
Where is The Landing? The place, I mean.
Well, I didn't want to actually name a specific place because I didn't want people racing off saying, oh, this must be so-and-so, this must be that person. But can we just say it's some sort of lakeside community inland of Noosa on the Sunshine Coast. Anybody who knows that area shouldn't have too much trouble identifying where it is, but I don't specifically want to name a place, if that's all right.
Yes, well, I have a very clear idea of where I think it's based on, but of course for a reader who doesn't know the area, it's a coastal community that's very sort of contained, I guess. So what does it offer you as a writer? I wonder how much it's following on from a style of sort of closed community, village stories.
Yes. Well, in fact, that's very much what my model was. I wanted it to be a comedy of manners, but I wanted it to be on a small stage in the style, I mean, you know, I'd hate to mention my own writing in the same breath, but Jane Austen is set in a very small, contained place. A lot of my favourite small English novels, like Barbara Pym, there's a whole lot of writers who tend to set their stories in a small canvas. A stranger comes to town, the ball gets set rolling. So I actually visited this place because I have a friend who has a weekender at this lakeside place in Queensland. And as we were coming into town, he said, now, over there, that's the place where so-and-so ran off with the daughter of the house there. That's the guy who drank himself to death. Over there was this other guy. And it suddenly seemed to me that it was a perfect setting for a novel in that it's like as if on a brightly lit stage. Everything was contained. I had a perfect sort of wall or environment or garden in which to set this. And I was kind of away just having that sort of shape.
It is a comedy of manners, but I'm really glad you're mentioning those sort of stage-like, almost theatrical elements because it has an ensemble cast. Who are the main players?
It does have an ensemble cast, and in a way it's a bit like a Trojan horse, and there have been a few squeals from readers thinking that it's just going to be the love story of Jonathan Lott, who's the central character, whose wife has just left him. And I was inspired to start that story knowing personally a lot of men who were suddenly shocked. They came home from work one day and their wives suddenly just said, that's it. It's over. And most of these men claimed they had no idea that the wives were that unhappy. And when you investigate a bit further, they would say things like, well, you know, maybe she said, oh, you know, we have to go and see a counsellor, or maybe she's been saying certain things. But to me, I was happy, I loved her, and I didn't really see what the problem was. And so in this case, Jonathan's wife has left him, but she's run off with a woman, which is neither here nor there really for the purposes of the story. But that's the kind of jumping off point. But why I say it's like a Trojan horse is within that, there's other stories of people within the community, and one of those people is Penny, who's a school teacher but also a frustrated artist, a very talented artist, who for various reasons has found her life taken a different direction. She ends up as a school teacher. And she is also responsible for her very vibrant elderly mother, who's 87 but a very formidable 87 and very energetic, very physically able and strong, intellectually able, who is Paris-born but came to Brisbane in the late 50s. So it becomes the story of Mari as well and her backstory.
Well, Mari for me was the most intriguing character, and I think that's because we do get her history. How would she describe or place herself?
Well, part of my interest in writing Mari was trying to talk about a couple of things, place and the experience of exile and also shame. Mari has a story that is revealed throughout the writing of the book, and I wanted to write a bit about shame for that generation. So she was a young girl in the Second World War and came to Australia basically as the only survivor of her family. And she's very ashamed of something in her past. And I've done a lot of work in previous books like The Broken Book around the concept of shame, of being an unmarried mother. And it seemed to me for that generation, shame was something that they had to deal with in a lot of ways. Either they were married in a shotgun marriage, or there was something, they might have been, had Indigenous blood, for example. A lot of Australians had to deal with that. So I wanted to explore that. And I also wanted to explore how it feels to be deprived of language and one's own place and everything that one recognises, not only through language, but also through the way a body is read. I mean, I've spent a lot of time outside of Australia. I spent a couple of years living in France. So I have personally experienced that. And it was fascinating to me just how, well, the world's history and story is one of displacement and exile. And so I wanted to have a look at someone who arrived in Brisbane, which was then in the 50s, a very surprising and stark and challenging place for someone who's lived in Europe and lived in amongst the stones of Europe to find a place that's basically built out of wood.
And so you've given us a sense of Mari's own complex history and secrets, but who does Brisbane think she is?
Brisbane in the 1950s was very proud, just becoming quite proud of itself, had a bit of a chip on its shoulder, I think, but started to make its way to the place we know it is today. So this story as well is a bit of the story of the growth of Brisbane. And I make a couple of little cracks about how Brisbane people count time from, you know, before Expo 88 and after Expo 88, when, you know, the current belief here, the rule of thumb here is that Brisbane ceased being a country town then and became, you know, this worldwide metropolis. River City, I think, is the term it likes to use. And so Mari is kind of part of that growth in a way, because she lives through that period of Brisbane in the 50s to what it is now. She is owner of a very big and influential department store in Brisbane in the 50s. And it's kind of the story of Mari's coming of age as much as Brisbane's coming of age, I suppose.
And, of course, it's also shown up by having a stranger enter the room and enter the community. So tell us about Anna.
Well, I like the character of Anna. I have a little affection for her because she's kind of rackety, and she's kind of blown through life and done all this weird stuff. Like she's cooked in restaurants in New York, and she's lived in this grand manor manor house outside London. You know, I came across people like this living in Europe, and you know, I'm fascinated and compelled by kind of how they survive, because she's survived through a series of rich husbands, lovers, various things, and she arrives in this small community in the Landing, and it's a question of will Jonathan take up her charms, really. And so I wanted to show Jonathan sort of falling for her charms, but not quite being sure whether, you know, they were solid enough.
Well, Anna is also yet another character who is recovering from a broken relationship, as Jonathan is. There's all sorts of fractured relationships and a certain longing for love, but surely the most longing comes in the form of Giselle. Now, she's a side character sort of darting out from the shadows. Where did she come from?
Unfortunately, I'm one of those writers who I don't do, you know, big cardboard sheets of paper plotting out everything right to the end. I'm more like in the David Malouf sphere, which is if a writer knows right from the beginning what he or she is writing, then it's going to be dull for the reader as well. So all I knew was I was writing about longing. That's one of the other themes of the book, longing in all kinds of forms, you know, for a broken family to be reformed, for love, for a meaning in life, whether it's artistic fulfillment or whether it's for some sort of broader sense of self. These people are all longing for something, and indeed I think that's a recurrent theme of my fiction. But Giselle is longing not just for love, but she's sort of longing to be part of something. She's longing to belong in some way.
Can you describe her?
Well, she's a child whose mother is an ex-junkie. In these parts of rural outskirts of big cities, you'll find this outside Sydney, you'll find it outside Melbourne, outside London, and certainly outside Brisbane. There's a mix of people. Like, so at the same time, you've got weekenders for ear, nose and throat specialists and very rich barristers, you'll find also living in those same communities people living in very cheap housing who might be on social service benefits, who may be ex-junkies, who may be current junkies, they may be alcoholics, they may be just people in very lowly paid professions and not very well educated. And Giselle represents that constituency at the landing. Her mum lived with someone who either committed suicide or died in some sort of circumstances. So she's had a very broken home life. She's kind of trailed around with a poor mum from place to place. She's a very self-sufficient little girl. She gets her own lunch. She's been getting herself off to school for as long as she can remember. And she attaches herself to all these people living at the landing in the hope of finding someone to become attached to, I think. So I think she came out of this notion that I knew I was writing about longing, and how could I express that, I guess, most forcefully in one single character, and I guess that's Giselle.
Now, as you said earlier, this isn't a conventional romance in that it's not a love story, but perhaps it's a capital R romance in that we're dealing with the lives of these characters in a sort of comedy of manners way. And by the end of the book, you do give us a quick vision of the future that also feels a bit as though you're playing with literary expectations, so we know what might happen to Giselle. Is this about hope?
Yes, and I think that's another big theme of my work, that I think humans have the most remarkable, endless capacity to keep hoping. No matter how knocked down, no matter how battered, no matter how ruined they are, you know, apart from severe depression, I think it's part of the human makeup, it's part of the human DNA to keep hoping. And I think that all of the characters manage to keep doing that. And I do think that it's the great human wonderment, really, that we can manage to keep doing that. So I did want to keep that in there. And I know that sometimes that's what disappoints readers who do think this is going to be just a plain old romance. But that's because I want my fiction to be like life. I mean, that to me is really what I aim to do. And you know, all of us are really stumbling around in the dark. I mean, we're a mixture of hope, you know, despair sometimes. But I think that human ability to get up again is really interesting. And, you know, Murray represents that, and Giselle represents that, and even Penny in the end. And but at the same time, even though we can keep hoping, we don't really know what's ahead of us. You know, life must be lived blindly in the dark, really, even though, you know, we have to act with confidence.
Susan Johnson, thank you so much for speaking to us on RN.
Thank you so much, Kate.
Susan Johnson's book is called The Landing, and it's not a plain old romance. It's published by Allen and Unwin, and she was speaking there with Kate Evans.